So the thing, you know, we have to coach on our good memories, you know, and don't emphasize the bad, you know, once you get your coaching point across. And then once you get your coaching point across, then, you know, let's talk about what we do well.
Welcome to the Jamoti Podcast. We are all surrounded by amazing coaches and leaders. So let's get an inside look at not just what they do, but how they do what they do. After all, becoming the best versions of ourselves is Jamoti, just a matter of doing it.
Today, we're joined by former college football coach, Art Briles. Coach Briles served as a head football coach in Texas from 1984 to 1999, and again in 2019 and 2020. His teams at all levels have always been known for playing a fast, up-tempo style. At Houston, he led the Cougars to a Conference USA championship in 2006 and was named Coach of the Year. As the head coach of Baylor, he led the Bears to two Big 12 championships and was named AP College Football Coach of the Year in 2013. In 2018, Coach Briles was named the head coach of an Italian football team and led them to a championship in 2022. Before we hear from Coach, take a moment to subscribe to our podcast and follow us on social media at Jamoti Podcast.
Well, Coach, how are you?
I'm good. Very, very good. Blessed.
That's awesome. I just want to thank you so much for coming on here and talking. Really, usually what I say is we're going to talk some hoops, which I don't, we can always do that. But what I really want to focus on is playing fast.
Okay.
And I feel like you are the right person to talk about with, I don't care what sport it is, but playing fast.
Well, I don't, facts normally don't lie. So I would say you're correct.
Well, like I said, thank you so much for giving up your time. I went to Baylor. I was there before you came, so our paths didn't cross, but definitely was a huge fan of watching your teams play. And so many coaches told me, because I in the basketball world, I've been all about running and gunning and trying to have fast possessions, you know, maximizing the three-point shot. A lot of coaches told me that I needed to go watch your practices. So this is the best I could do is get you on here.
It's a little bit ironic that you mentioned that, because, of course, I've really tried to play tempo all my life coaching. I love basketball. I started out coaching basketball.
Nice.
My first coach year or two, just because of the pace of the game, because you have to make, you know, such quick decisions. I mean, it's back and forth. You can't worry about what just happened because something else is happening, you know. And so I love that aspect of basketball, just up and down the floor, you know, dribble, shoot. Like I used to tell them, you can't get scores on the board by putting it on the floor.
You gotta
shoot the ball.
Man. Yeah.
You know, to tell them they don't put your name in the paper for dribbling. But, you know, so I was always kind of the run and gun guy. But when I was assistant at Tech, to kind of correlate what you're saying, I went out and watched Bobby Knight's practice when I was assistant coach at Texas Tech, and he was a head b-ball coach out there because mm-hmm. for a couple of reasons. You know, first of all, because he's iconic, you know, in the professional sports world, you know, not just basketball, but I think you could go anywhere in America that anybody that has, you know, any, you know, association with sports and say Bobby Knight didn't know who he was, you know.
Right.
So that I knew that was an iconic figure that had earned, you know, that name and that reputation. So I wanted just to watch him, you know, see how he handled his players, how he ran practice. And you know, he was really gracious and let me come, and I just come sit up in the bleachers, you know, when it fits schedules, and would just observe. And, you know, because a sport's a sport, you know, it doesn't matter what it is. I mean, it's all about maximizing your opportunities and creating opportunities. And, but I, you know, what I really gained out of his, watching his practices, probably was just kind of how hands off he was. You know, he let the other coaches do all the coaching. He'd jump in when he felt like, you know, I guess something needed to be handled, and the rest of the time he'd just kind of walk the floor and observe. And you know, very organized, very practical, and no wasted time and energy, which is something that I've always been a big proponent of. It's just, you know, everybody's got a certain amount of time. Don't waste it. You know, I don't want anybody wasting my time, so I'm not going to waste anybody's time, you know. And And the other thing that it's, I think, is really critical in any sport, and it's hard to do with numbers, but is movements. You know, I mean, yeah. What you hate to do is, you know, you get your ankles taped, you get your socks on just right, you get your Converse on just how you like them, your sweatbands, your headband, you know, and get your towel hanging just right. And you go out there and you stand around for an hour and 45 minutes, you know, and do some, you know, calisthenics. And then next thing you know, we're blowing everybody up. Well, same thing in football, you know, you spend 25 minutes getting suited out, you walk out there on the field and you do warm-ups or, you know, whatever you do, which I never warmed up anyway. I wasn't a guy that's, you know, strength coaches and trainers don't like me a whole lot, but we warm up by doing, you know, things that associated with football, like throwing a ball and catching it, running routes and, you know, doing things along those lines. That was our warm up period. But, you know, and then, you know, you just take to see a guy go out there and get all hyped up for standing around. So I always try to involve as many people as possible, which correlates back to tempo and playing fast and, you know, a fresh legs or fast legs, you know. And so I always, you know, we sub guys in, let them go. And because when we want to, you know, when they dial their number, I wanted them to be fresh and fast, and never really wasted a lot of guys on dummy routes, you know, so to speak. I mean, if they're not involved, you're not involved. The guys that are involved will take care of that side of the field. And, you know, here we go, which is, you know, not practical to, you know, football page three, but that's, you know, there's a bunch of different ways to do things too.
I love the fact that you talked about Bobby Knight's influence, and that actually surprised me a little bit. I got to play against him, which it was kind of crazy running down the floor. And, you know, you kind of peek at Big 12. There's just all these great coaches. You peek to your right and go, golly, that's Bobby Knight right there. And then you got to snap right back in and remember, I'm playing. I'm not just a fan. But I would always have thought of him as the ultimate micromanager. But what you're saying is kind of the opposite.
Well, that's what I observed. Now, yeah. You know, I'm talking about watching 10 practices over a 3-year period. But, you know, I mean, if the cat likes to go outside and use the restroom or go in the corner, I mean, they're going to go where they normally go. So that would be all I could judge it on. You know, I hadn't read any books, hadn't talked to anybody else.
Well, and I think your perspective, though, is it's probably correct, because I'm going off of, I don't know, like, perceptions or what you saw, you know, like when he was in an interview or something, where it just seemed to be, he seemed to be a hyper control guy. But coach, I believe you. And I think if you've seen, golly, I think one or two practices is enough to really get a good idea of how somebody runs a team. To see 10 over a few years, I take it.
Yeah. And, you know, that was during Big 12 play. So they were important practices. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm sure, you know, he micromanaged off the field, you know, or off the court, you know, with his coaches and with his, you know, guys that he felt were like the leaders of his team, you know, making certain points to them that he felt like they needed to carry over to the floor.
I love the quote, fresh legs equals fast legs. So I would imagine then, and because I really do want to get into the way that you practiced and the why behind some of those things, but did that affect the length of time that you practiced? Were you a shorter guy than, you know, hey, we're going to be out here 3 or 4 hours and we're going to grind?
You know, it's really funny, but yeah, I've honestly, and what once again, kind of contrary to what most people think, but I really think practice is a little bit overrated, you know, because I think you get your, you get your mental aspect, you know, of what you want to get done, how you want to get it done, who you want to do it with, you know, first of all, you know, because personnel is a lot more important than philosophy. And then you get out there on the field and you execute it and you go and you take things that you feel like work. And if they don't work, you don't waste time trying to, you know, fix something that can't be fixed. But, you know, through the years, it's kind of changed. Really, honestly, we were always ahead of the game, you know, with the NCAA came in and kind of mandated shorter practices and limited pads and all that. And even when I was coaching high school, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, I mean, we'd go, once we got out of district play, you know, on my better teams, I mean, we'd never put anything on but a helmet, you know, the rest of the time, you know, through the season, because you know, it's a long season. If you hadn't figured out who knows how to play, you know, being around those guys, you know, 340 days out of 365 a year, then, you know, maybe you need to learn how to evaluate better. But, you know, we just get out there and do our trade, get it done, and then get off the field and really, you know, concentrate on strength and conditioning, you know, in the weight room, you know, because I always felt like I can't control how fast you are. You know, maybe how high you can jump, I can help it a little bit, but, you know, I can determine how physically fit you are by our work ethic and our attitude and our approach to training. And so that was always very critical, you know, with me because, you know, just personal story. I mean, I was a little kid coming out of high school, weighed 173 pounds and never had lifted a weight. And then I go, you know, to college the first year and finally, you know, see a weight room and train a little bit. And I weighed, you know, like 198 in December when I got there in August. So it just showed me what you can do if you have the ability to train yourself. And so we've always just emphasized quickness. It's like, you know, I like always tell them the three F's: fast, fearless, and physical. Now don't go English on me, but,
no, I love it. I love it.
I was an English teacher, but but that's what you can control. You control how fast you play.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're scared or not, you know, you should never be scared. You should always be, you know, aggressive and approaching, you know, each situation with the belief that it's going to happen. So be fearless. And then, you know, every sport's got a physicality to it. I mean, I can name guys off the, you know, the Celtics and I don't know who would Isaiah Thomas and them. Who was that with? That was with the Detroit. Who was
that?
Detroit?
The Bad Boys. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Lambeer. I mean, you know, Lambeer couldn't play today. You know, he's 6'9" and a half and 260 pounds. But he made himself a player by, you know, being aggressive, tough.
Yep.
You know, Rodman's the same way. You know, Michael Jordan, a great defensive player. You know, those guys just, you know, you find your niche and you go with it. And the fluid guys that have the God-given ability, you just, you know, do what you can do to, you know, if they can't dribble left, then always play the right. You know, I mean, you got to take away whatever they're good at and try to minimize their ability that's over yours.
I love the practice is overrated quote. And I think as soon as you said it, however many guys listen to this, there's going to be probably 85% that just go, oh, man, no.
Probably me and you.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, Coach, I don't know what. No, that's not true. I don't know what happened to me because I was very traditional with the high school coach, the college coach I had, and, you know, started out actually kind of want, because Dave Bliss was a Bobby Knight disciple. He was his first assistant. So, you know, and I played for Coach Drew. Started out for him. Coach Bliss was very much like Bobby Knight, just a little bit better in front of the media. Didn't always let him know exactly what he thought. And
Doctor.
Yeah.
That surprises me.
But somewhere along the ways, I just got fascinated with everything fast pace, fast basketball, maximizing the three ball. But when you start to go down that road, I mean, you realize that there's just not many down there. And now, obviously, like in football, it's become more common. There are more people. Everybody says they want to play fast, but do they really want to do what it takes? And do they know how hard it is?
Yeah. Or can you live with third and tens? I mean, that's the kicker.
Can you live with 0-10 from three in 10 possessions?
Yeah, exactly.
I can. But
keep firing it up. Yeah. But that's really the kicker. I mean, a lot of people want to do it, but if you're going to do it, it's just kind of like, you know, learn how to swim. You got to jump in deep water, you know, and then you'll figure out how to survive until somebody throws you a life jacket, you know? So it's a easy talk, but it's a tough task. And really, you know, the last couple, 3 years, really, I guess I went over in 2018. The first time was when I went to Italy. And, you know, over there, it kind of helped me with my practice is overrated deal, because over there, we practice two nights a week and then you have a walkthrough on game day. And that's it, you know. And you got a whole team, special teams, defense, you know, all that. And you got to get it all in. And, you know, basically an hour and 45 minute practice from 9 to 10:45 at night. And then you lift afterwards. two nights a week and then a 25, 30 minute walkthrough on game day. And, you know, it can happen. And really guys, you know, pick it up. They hold the evidence and keep it ready for the game, you know, just as well as if you'd, you know, spend all this time, you know, overkill, rep to where, you know, maybe they get, you know, maybe not as attentive as you'd like for them to be, you know, on the 10th time you say it as opposed to the first time you say it.
Yeah.
That's why I always really, you know, I love to coach guys that are intellectual, you know, that really think the game, understand the game, whether it be, you know, football, basketball, baseball, whatever, you know, it's all got its intellectual concepts to it, because you can coach on a different wave and prepare a different wave. And then the guys that don't utilize their intellectual ability, you know, as much, then you compromise with them to help them still be able to achieve a high level by how you coach them and play them in the game, you know, because that's what I said. That's why they call us coach. You know, you can't coach Joe and Jack the same way if they're not the same person. So Everybody's got to be coached differently. I mean, we'll be fair about how we coach, but, you know, when it comes to playing time and things along those lines, I mean, then it's all about the team.
Coaches, the Jamoti Podcast is powered by Ballogy. Manage and measure your players' skill development and increase accountability year-round utilizing the Ballogy app. Boost inter-squad competition with drills backed by the National High School Basketball Coaches Association, including a 40-shot Ballogy skills assessment. Please visit Ballogy.com/teams for information on how you can provide this resource for your team. Going back to practice a little bit, I've always liked the idea that simplicity is sophistication. So even though we might do things that are very simple, it actually allows us to be great at them. Did you feel like simplicity, especially with, like, you know, your philosophies on less practice time, getting a lot of people moving, how did simplicity kind of work into that?
Well, in the football world, it's everything. Because when you say simplicity, to me, that's, that's numerous sets, set personnel, which is the key in football, because if you don't sub, they can't sub, you know, and you can play fast. So by using set personnel, different formations, different hash marks, different plays from each hash, with simplified signals, you know, one word defines a play, tells everybody what to do on a play. So the simpler you can make your verbiage, then the faster that everybody can play and the less they have to remember, quite honestly. You know, so, you know, all that to me, being simple leads to sophistication, if that's what you said.
Yes, sir.
You know,
yes, sir.
You know, because the sophistication part of it is that you're doing a complex system in a simple way. And to the other side of the ball, it's they see the complexity and the complex of it, but they don't see the simplicity of it.
Yeah.
Because what they're having to do from the defensive side is they've got to cover all their bases, where offensively you can have a guy on first, and if you get a single, he may score. You know, to where if you're playing defense, you got to be first, second, third, and you try to lay down a bunt to get him in, you know. So that's the freedom that you have offensively that you don't have on defense, because defense is why they call it defense, because it's protected. You know, they're protecting everything. On offense, you're being aggressive. You're setting the tone. You know, it's your job to control the tempo, control the game, and to set the tone for what you want guys to do. Because with a formation, with personnel, if you do things correct offensively, you can have the defense line up however you want them to line up. You know, by your formation, by your personnel, by your down and distance, by your hash mark, by your position on the field. So all that equates into a play call that's predetermined in a play caller's mind by the previous play. So, I mean, like I said, that's what I always loved about basketball, because, I mean, you're down there, you know, you mess around, you dish it underneath, you score, and then you're bam. I mean, you're right. You're flipping my offense to defense right now. You're back in their face and trying to get the knockdown, pick up, you know, lay up, and then go again. you know, so it's a fun game, you know, and that's really what it's supposed to end up being. So that goes back to me with guys standing around, not getting reps, not doing stuff. It takes the fun out of it.
Yep.
You know, they want to play the game and have fun doing it. And you have to admire kids and grown-ups, whatever. Today, anybody, you know, below the professional level, and they still play for fun, but, you know, it's a livelihood to them, and it's a whole different deal. But there's a lot of other avenues to take in this world today. And guys that, and girls, you know, in the women's sports that have the courage and the confidence to fail, quite honestly, you know, you have to admire them. And that's the way I always looked at it with our players. You know, I always respected the fact that they were willing to take a chance. You know, a lot of people won't take a chance. And as a player, as a coach, that's the only thing I ever asked for. And that's what I told our players, you know, if I give you one thing, what would it be? And they better say a chance, you know, because what you do with that chance is up to you. But somebody has to give you an opportunity, a chance. And if you stay in it long enough, get in the way long enough, you know, do right long enough, eventually, you know, I would say that 98% of the time, you will get some opportunity, some chance to prove your worth.
Coaches, the Jamoti Podcast is powered by Shoot 360. The future of basketball has arrived in Dallas-Fort Worth. Shoot 360 combines the latest sports technology with the fundamentals of basketball skill development. The result is a one-of-a-kind video game-like basketball program designed to improve your shooting, dribbling, and passing. Visit shoot360dfw.com to learn more and register for your free one-hour workout evaluation. Shoot 360, the future of basketball is here.
You're the head coach at Grapevine Faith?
Yeah, it's good. This is year 11 here. We've got a really special bunch. And, you know, I was at the public school level for about 5 or 6 years, and then it was about time to, as an assistant, about time to start looking for a head job. And this one came open. I looked online and saw what the school was all about, and it just kind of hit me, you know, right in the stomach that this is where I need to be. And we have a unique setup here with the academics, the Christian environment, but then, you know, basketball wise, we've been able to kind of create this identity of fast basketball. And in fact, you know, up on our wall, it says start fast, stay fast as we come out and we hit that and we walk out into our gym. And kind of I really do feel like just listening to you over the years, and there's a lot of synergy between the two. And so that's why I'm just so excited to have this time with you.
Well, I appreciate it also. I really do. It's kind of my passion. I love talking any type of sports, because it's all I've ever done all my life.
You mentioned a couple words though, like taking a chance, and then freedom. I got to imagine with your style, just the same way with mine, like we're asking them, and I think you even said courage, like we're asking them to be courageous and take chances, but you've got to create that environment of freedom there, or else they're looking over their shoulder, they're afraid to fail. How did you do that with how fast you guys were playing? Because that is one thing I always loved, is your players were taking chances and doing things where I feel like most players would tense up in those moments. How did you create that?
I think, you know, and that's a great question. And I think there's, you know, there's a lot of answers to it. Honest answers are probably not as prevalent as, you know, coach talk answers. But, you know, the thing I always prided myself in is that I felt like our players knew what they were going to get before they got it. So if I was out there on a Monday being this way, I was going to be the same way Saturday game day. You know, I was not going to fluctuate. I was not going to change. I was not, you know, I didn't ever think you had to, you know, talk ugly to play tough. You know, I was never a guy that, you know, cursed at players or ever did any of that kind of stuff, because I didn't want anybody doing it to me. You know, all it would do is make me mad. And you know, then you kind of lose your focus to where you're wanting to show this or do this instead of concentrating on what your job is, you know. And you have a job to do as a player. So it's like I always said about a quarterback, you know, to me, the most important ability of a quarterback is predictability. You know, I got to know what you're going to do before you do it. And if I don't coach you up well enough in those situations, then that's my fault. You know, so I'm going to make sure that the people in the positions that are handling the ball are doing what I see on the field is what they see on the field, and they should be making decisions that, you know, are best for our team. But, you know, to answer your question, I think it's just players feel safe and will be courageous and will fight and be fearless if they feel there's a trust factor and if there's a love factor involved. And it, the hardest thing to earn from anybody is trust.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, sometimes it takes 2 or 3 years, even with a player, you know, and really the only way to learn that is being, or to earn that is being the same way day in and day out, because then they know that, okay, this is really who that person is.
Over the years, a lot of coaches have asked me about our style of play and, you know, how does it actually work? How do you get them doing that? And I always tell them that it's us. We have to give up control. Like if I'm trying to control every possession, everything they do, and they're constantly looking over, then I almost suck the creativity out. But then I would imagine you would feel the same way, is when they do miss a shot. But like you said, that's predictable, meaning we have worked on that. And that is the shot that we're okay with. We will live with that. I have to be careful how I react on misses, because if I want them being courageous and shooting that thing, but when they look over, I'm disgusted with the failure or the miss, that just erodes the confidence that I'm trying to build in them, right?
Well, I mean, my quick response to that would be, you know, let the shooter shoot. Let the defensive guys play defense. You know, I mean, if you got a guy jacking it up that's, you know, 18% from the foul line, he probably needs to be a great defensive player.
That's right.
You know, that's so right. When you're game planning and getting your, you know, your facts together with them, you know, everybody's got a role, you know, and that, you know, that left guard on offense has to understand that he can't get jittery. He can't jump when things get tight. He's got to stay calm. He's got to stay confident, and he's got to protect his gap. You know, it's the same thing in basketball. I mean, everybody's got a role that they got to take care of. So if you're a driving or disher, that's what you do.
Yeah.
You know, you're driving, you dish. I mean, who was it, Spud Aldridge or Mookie? I don't know.
Mookie Blaylock, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's 5'3", playing in the NBA. But it's because he's a creator, you know, and he had his role. And, you know, so he's, you know, that's what players have to understand. I mean, you know, Grandma and Paw, they may want to see, you know, sweet little Johnny light it up for 18 points a game, but if sweet little Johnny can't shoot, they better hope he gets on the floor by being a great defensive player.
Yeah.
Because I ain't playing sweet little Johnny if he's jacking it up when he can't shoot. You know, so that's just, to me, that's all role playing. You know, so if a guy's shooting the ball that you feel like is a shooter and he's missing, then you know eventually he's going to come around.
That's right.
You know, it just doesn't keep happening. So, you know, a good putter is a good putter. You know, a guy that you know, gets to thinking about all the bad. It's like I've always said, the reason a 15-year-old never misses a 5-foot putt is because he's never had one. You know, I mean, guys that are 68 have had 7,500 of them, and they've missed, you know, 7,400. So they know they have bad memories. So the thing, you know, we have to coach on our good memories, you know, and don't emphasize the bad, you know, once you get your coaching point across. And then once you get your coaching point across, then, you know, let's talk about what we do well.
Coach, I love that phrase. We got to be coaching on the good memories. Okay, because that's what we're asking our players to do as well. That possession's done, short memory, selective amnesia is a way we like to talk about. Like, we get to choose the things that we think about, the things we remember, the things we forget. I think you're right on the money there, Coach.
Thanks.
Hey, so with practice and creating that fast style, obviously there needs to be standards. And we need to have consequences or for players not doing so. Like, let's just say you saw slow happening in your practice, whether it's with transitions, training, things like that. What were ways that you got guys getting faster or getting to the tempo that you wanted?
Well, once again, the easy answer is the bench, but it's not always the best answer. You know, I mean, that's, that's the tough boy answer, you know, and I never, you know, tried to classify myself as a tough coach. You know, I wanted to be a fair coach. And you know, another saying that comes to mind is we're going to treat everybody fairly, but not equally, you know, because some people are going to be treated differently because of what they're able to do for the team. You know, so I would never try to put a player in a position to answer your question kind of in practice to where he might be in a failure type situation. You know, if he's not a guy that, and I had one of his first round draft choice, I won't mention his name, but if he's not a guy that's going to, you know, go full speed, you know, five reps in a row, then he's going to play two reps in a row. And then we're going to rest him, you know, and let the other guy go in that'll, you know, go out there and still be running today, you know, because you got to have those. I was that guy, you know, so you got to have those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, I got on the field because I worked harder and tried harder and wasn't as good, but I worked harder and tried harder. And, you know, they used me to help push the good guys, you know, but that's
why
okay.
Can't you be more like him?
Well, that's okay because I got, you know, I was able to contribute in those ways and that was okay. But, and I think that really helped me as a coach because I wasn't a gifted athlete. You know, I mean, I had to work for things to feel right and be right. You know, I wasn't a dog, but I mean, I was a guy that, you know, just wasn't overly gifted in a bunch of areas. So, you know, you analyze, you find a way that you can, you know, get on the field, and then that's what you do. And so I always look for those guys in practice, you know, because they're always out there. And for teammates, you know, they're always good teammates, guys that just want to help the team, make the other guys, you know, better and rest the other guys that are better than them when they need resting. So a quick answer to your question would be don't put guys that matter, you know, on the attitude and the mentality and the perception of the team in a situation to where you know it's not going to be easy for them and they know it. So instead of having a flare up, you know, with an assistant coach or with another player saying, oh man, that guy ain't working, why is he getting to play? You know, I mean, that kind of stuff happens. Just eliminate the situation before it ever starts. I mean, it's kind of like Nancy Reagan said, just say no. You know, just prevention. Prevention's the key.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to get in trouble if you're never in a troubled situation. So just eliminate the troubled situation and then it doesn't exist.
When Mike D'Antoni was coaching the Suns, he had the motto and he wrote a book about it. It's one of my favorites called 7 Seconds or Less. That's how fast they wanted their possession to be. And at that time, there was no one else playing like that. But now, if you were to take their timing and put it in today's game, they would rank 23rd in the NBA. So
with 7 seconds.
Yeah, so things have changed. Oh. Yeah, they've all moved that way.
Yeah, it's four dribbles and shoot.
That's right. To your
no passes.
That's right. Well, yeah, maybe one up, but you're shooting that thing. Yeah. And so how would, with the pace that you played at, how has the game moved forward now to where, like, would your pace be elite still, or would it be, are more people doing it now? Has the game moved that way?
Well, I mean, when you use the word elite, to me, that means the best. You know, and that's something that, you know, I mean, like I said, facts prove points, not talking, but action does and reality does. And, you know, so we, you know, over, I mean, you know, a 10-year period, you know, we were the fastest team in America running plays, you know, day in and day out. So, I mean, those are just facts. And it still exists today at a bunch of different universities, you know, across America that are associated with our offense. And, you know, I could list, you know, 15 universities that, you know, are what I would consider, you know, proteges of doing the things, having the step over into the lake without a life jacket to where they're saying, this is what we're doing. You know, this is how we're playing ball.
Do you have to be all in to do that? Like, can you even have a plan B, or does plan B take away from some of that confidence?
I think, you know, I mean, of course, plan B is always the, you know, situationally, fourth and ones, you know, score on the board, time on the clock. You know, you just, you can't always just have your hair on fire. You know, you got to play smart. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know if they have a shot clock in high school, but do they?
I wish they did. In some states they do, not in Texas.
Oh my goodness. So, if you got nobody to score, you know, you throw it around for,
that's right,
what is it, 8 minute quarters for seven minutes and 53 seconds.
There's people that try to do that, coach. They're not very popular.
Well, I mean, it'd be hard to recruit, you know, or get kids to move into your district.
That's right.
Let's say love defense and passing. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I think you're in, you're all in, but you have to still be intelligent. Mm. With the bottom line is not being glamorous, it's winning, you know, and that's the bottom line. So, whatever allows your football team or basketball team the best possibility to win, that's first and foremost. Now, how you approach that trying to win is then you're getting philosophical, mm-hmm. you know, which everybody's got a philosophy and everybody's got a what they feel like is their best way of doing it, or they wouldn't be doing it. But yeah,
go ahead.
Well, the thing that really helps us, and I'm going all the way back to my first head job in 1984 in Hamlin, Texas, where I was a Houston beer guy coming from Houston. And, you know, first year we're running the beer, doing all this, we go 13-0-1. The second year, you know, I felt like, hey, if we're ever going to win a state championship, we got to change. You know, we're going to run up against a better team that's going to stop us, which is what happened to us in the quarterfinals. And, you know, the next year we went shotgun one back. And, you know, spread it around. We still went 14-1, got beat in the semis. But, you know, so we just adapted to the situation and kind of fit, you know, what we need to do. But the thing that I did since that day, what I was getting to is I always had a lot of, you know, really it's kind of a, boy, you hate to use the word pride, but it was meaningful to me. And you can ask any of the coaches that coach with me, but we never would look over the fence. You know, I'd say, hey, we're going to do what we do. We don't care what anybody else is doing anywhere else. We're coaches. You know, that's our job. So we know our situation better than anybody else. So let's figure out what's best for us. And I don't want anybody looking over the fence seeing what somebody else is doing. And I think that mindset bleeds to creativity, you know, because what's the deal? I mean, you got what you got, you're doing what you're doing, and as far as you know, nobody else is doing it. So it's your creativeness that allows, you know, the best possibility for your players.
What were some of your influences early on breaking away from, besides what you just mentioned, but kind of who were you watching or emulating at that point?
You know, my dad was a high school coach, you know, actually coached me in high school. So he was very, you know, influential in me. And mainly, you know, back then it was, you know, the eye set, pitch the ball, you know, run the bootleg. I mean, so, you know, from a philosophical standpoint, not, but just from a handling people. And then just the care and the nature of what the game can do to you, you know, and you know, and if nobody's ever coached or been in a coach's family, it's not, you're not a fan, you know, it's a livelihood. I mean, it hurts. It's painful. Everybody in the family feels it. You know, a 3-year-old child, you know, will cry like a baby just along with their 38-year-old father. You know, because it's just painful. You know, we're a mother, you know, it's just painful. But my dad was an influence when I went to Houston. Of course, Bill Yeoman was the coach there. And I don't know if you know the story on Bill, but, you know, innovative coach, very innovative. He was the guy that invented the Houston beer, which for two decades, everybody ran across America, probably from the late 60s, you know, to the late 80s. And it was just, you know, it was the offense. And so he was the innovator of that. So being around him and just, you know, seeing how his mind worked, you know, from that standpoint, really, really strong person as far as, you know, not being afraid to step over the line and do something different. So that's really, you know, kind of about it. You know, I listened to Bill Walsh speak about 1990 about staying fresh, playing a 16-game season in the NFL at that time, and, you know, how his players, Jerry Rice and those guys, would be fresh at the end of the season because he pulled off pads and did all that. So that was a huge, you know, influence on me at that time because I was a, you know, young head coach, been a head coach about 6 or 7 years. And then a guy named Bob Ledbetter from South Lake Carroll, Texas, who won a bunch in the early 90s state championships back when South Lake was like a 3A. And he mentioned, I listened to him speak at a clinic out in Lubbock about, you know, not running after practice. You know, this was probably 1992. Or three, and you know, I kind of thought, why hadn't somebody else ever said that? Because that's, to me, that's the smartest thing ever done. So, you know, since that day that I listened to him, would completely cut running out after practice because all it did was ended practice on a negative note because, you know, a big guy that can't touch the line or jumps or whatever, doesn't finish hard enough, everybody's got to run again. You know, so it made practice clean when it was over, and we got our workout, you know, got our conditioning and practice by playing fast. But those are some of the, you know, really good influence, along with all the, you know, numerous assistant coaches that I've had throughout the years that have very creative and blessed minds.
I've always tried to think of what are the things that either my high school coach did, or I feel like coaches just are doing because it's always been done that way. And I try to question those. And running as a punishment is one that I've really eliminated from us because we want to run to win. Like, we want running to be fun. And so to your point about the end of practice running, I mean, I watched my son play select ball, and sure enough, they've been going for 2 hours and all the parents are ready to leave. But you know what? Hey, let's get on the line. Let's, because we're tough. That's not tough. That's just a poor waste of time.
That's after the coaches showcase talk for 8 to 10 minutes, you know, where it's
The players aren't tired. Yeah. You've been talking the whole time.
They listen for 45 seconds and then they're thinking, how much are we going to have to run? But no, that's the great thing about sports. So, I mean, it all works and kids love it, and it's a blessing to be involved in it.
The Jamoti Podcast is powered by Sideline Interactive. Sideline Interactive is the leading manufacturer for high-quality, innovative scoring tables and LED video display boards that help coaches and schools bring more excitement to fans, create huge fundraising opportunities, and make their jobs easier. Visit sidelineinteractive.com to check out their amazing products. Coach, before I let you go, I got to do the speed round with you. These are quick questions. First thing that pops in your head, just blurt it out. And I'm going to adjust some of these for football.
Okay.
All right. Favorite ice cream flavor?
I got to go chocolate.
Nice. Greatest quarterback of all time?
Ooh. You know, to me, Joe Namath, because of the era I grew up in, him making prediction and winning the Super Bowl when nobody thought they could.
I think that really does influence a lot of people, because in the basketball world, you ask, like, who's the GOAT? A lot of times people go to, when were they watching it? Yeah. Like, when were they in it? For me,
if you're going to ask me a basketball goat, I'm going Pete Maravich. I mean, that's
coach.
My guy. So you could see the guys that I really admire, because he was an innovator. He was different.
Him and his dad, no doubt, viewed the game differently. And I mean, I don't know if you ever saw the made-for-TV movie back in the day, the Pistol Pete, Birth of the Legend. Well, him and his dad are going into this game that seems to be like a no-win game up against a bigger, better, faster team. And little Pete looks up at his dad like, what are we going to – or no, his dad asked Pete, what are we going to do? And Pete, as an eighth grader, says, we're going to get put on a show they'll never forget. And I think there's a part of how we play that – guys, people pay to watch you play. Let's put on a show.
I never had a pair of tight socks for 10 years.
Floppy socks, let's go. His homework basketball movies, VHS tapes, those drills, that started my love for drill work. I mean, Coach, I'm with you.
No, awesome.
Okay, best football movie of all time.
You know, I'm not a huge movie guy or TV guy, but the first one that popped in my mind was the one, the remake, The Longest Yard with Burt Reynolds. Just because it's bad guys versus the good guys, you know, and the good guys are going to, you know, do whatever they can to keep the bad guys from winning. But, and then the great, you know, quote at the end of the movie where, you know, the guys going down, walking down the field, and the warden or something saying, shooting. And he goes down there and grabs the ball and he says, game ball. You know, so they're, I mean, just looking for a reason to get down on the, you know, the inmates. So that to me was the first movie came to mind when you said
I love that. Texting or talking?
Oh, 1,000% texting. It's just so much more.
No doubt. Efficient. No doubt. Favorite holiday?
Don't have one, all of them. You know, I mean,
nice.
You know, you'd like to feel like every day is a holiday, you know, and a blessing. So don't really have a favorite.
I think the way we coach, I hope you don't, I'm not trying to be that arrogant, but the way you think, the way I think, I feel like every day is that. Like I tell people around school, they'll ask me, how's your day? I'll say, I'm living the dream. Like, look what I get to do every day. And exactly. Two more, Coach. What book would you give someone?
Ooh, well, I assume everybody's got the Bible, which is probably a bad assumption.
Let's put that off the table. Okay.
And then go from there. I mean, probably, a powerful book that I read when I was a freshman in high school, which, you know, is probably a little bit strange, but it was by Jack Tatum. They call me the assassin, you know, and it was about the brand of football. I mean, it's a bad title, but it's a brand of football that they played back then, you know, and he was a vicious safety for the Raiders. And, you know, here I am I was 126 pounds, squirrely guy that, you know, wanted to be tough. And so it kind of helped, you know, my mindset, you know, helped me try to be a tougher guy than really my DNA allowed. But that's, that's a good football book that I can think of.
Love that. Last one. How many cups of coffee do you drink per day?
I'm a one cup guy, you know, it's a big one, but but I mean, out of discipline, you know, I sometimes try to go, or I will go a day or two without doing it just cause you don't want your life controlled. You know, you want to control your life. And so that's the only reason. Just like I went vegan for a year just to prove that I could do
it. How'd that go for you?
Not very good. I mean,
still not a vegan. So
it's more fun to eat. I promise.
Oh, yeah. Coach, this has been so enjoyable. I've always been a big fan of yours. Anybody that's ever talked playing fast, I feel like your name has come up in the conversation somehow. It doesn't matter what sport. Thank you so much for giving up your time and coming on talking with me. There's a lot of golden nuggets in this, Coach.
Well, I appreciate what you do for young people, and especially in the environment that you're doing it in. So God bless you, and I appreciate you having me.
Thank you for checking out today's episode. Please take a moment to subscribe to this podcast, share it with your fellow coaches, and find us on social media for what's coming up next on the Jamoti Podcast. It's just a matter of doing it.